can we agree that this job isn't for everybody? We make it for everybody.
Yeah.
That's almost the problem.
Listen, I've had many people come to me who want great barbers. You can always make someone a great barber. You can't make them a great person. If they got the attitude, they turn up on time, they look dapper, you know what? We can make that skill set a lot better.
Yeah, but the repetition is key for us.
It's volume.
We wouldn't have a business without it.
Without volume, you've got nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, plastic heads, not my favourite.
Doesn't work.
For us, the plastic heads is just the first week or two to learn the layering.
Off you go. Once you start your journey, don't worry, you're going to pass at the end of it. And it's for everybody.
Can I interrupt?
Go for it.
The standards of the haircutting have never been higher. But yeah. What are we discussing here? Fading. Everyone knows how to fade now.
Yeah.
Everyone's starting to learn with scissors now.
I agree and I disagree.
Hi. Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laband. And we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Well, now I've got a question here. Hang on a second. Sorry to jump on you, but a very good point, but it's leaking into my next question, which is, yeah, how do you see the kind of client experience? Is it that important? You know, so I've got someone that's written in, is it the beers, the wines, the manicures, the massage, the head massage and the music and all that kind of stuff? Is that the important thing now to make a successful company? Or is it just really good traditional service? The guy coming in feeling confident in your ability and feeling like he's in his barbershop, like his favourite bar or... Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's horses for courses, I think.
Depends on the salon, yeah.
Depends on the salon. But I do think the service is where you're going to win. People always remember how you make them feel, right? So that has to be, if you're not mapping out the journey of your customer from how they book with you or how they see you outside, your reputation, all that kind of thing, and then even when they walk into the shop, that whole journey to the chair, in the chair, when they're finished, when they pay, whole thing needs to be mapped out. Yeah. You've got to set yourself because the standards are heightening and everyone is kind of like, you see it now, like before you walk around your local town and you'd see really shit haircuts and you'd be like, you know, we're still in with a shout here. But then you're walking around and you think, there's some good work. You know, obviously you still see some haircuts, you think, wow, what's that?
But do you think many stores do have that? That, like you say, this is how we do it. This is how you greet. This is how you take their jacket.
Essential.
This is how you gown up. This is how you.
Well, I'd like to think so. I know there's some that don't, but I'd like to think that most people are giving it. I think they have an idea of what they'd like. It's them policing that and keeping that actually. Culture.
If you have a chain of barbershops, you're more likely to have a system. If
you have to, right?
You have to, yeah. If you're going to have a protocol, a process of the, because that's how you grew in the first place, right? But if you're a one-man band or just like got a couple of a barbershop on the local high street and you haven't, and again, I'm going to say something that's not to everyone's pleasing, but if you're not raised in the right way, if you're not brought up with manners, with etiquette, with, you know, doing grafting when you're a 16-year-old, then you're going to find customer service really difficult. You're not going to understand what that is.
You know, I love it. I mean, customer service to me is standard. I think customer service is putting the light on, putting the music
that's
on.
What, that's
customer
the whole...
delight is what you should
be. But that's generally why
absolutely.
I went into it. I felt really comfortable.
What a good feeling to make someone
enjoyable.
Happy.
Well, that's all I had because when I first started barbering, I was rubbish. I didn't have anything else. I had service because that was my background. I'd come from customer services.
Brilliant.
So I tell this story, but it was like I was working with a team of barbers and that no one would show me what to do. It's different now. Everyone was willing to show anybody anything, right? Before that, they were showing me nothing. So I'd have to I used to go home and write notes about who they were, their name, their dog, their missus, their all this kind of stuff, right? And then next time I'd see them, customer first recognition. All right, Dave, how's the thing? Like, whatever. And then over time, people would want to sit in my chair, even though I wasn't as good as everybody else. The service was everything. Yeah. So that's why I feel a little bit of a fraud. Sometimes I stand on stage and show people how to cut hair and talk about perfect haircuts. But in my head, I'm like, service is everything.
Yeah,
I can out-service anybody. I don't care who you are. I don't care how great you are. I'll out-service you all day long.
And you know, you hit the nail on the head. And for me, I preach and teach is how you make someone feel. It makes them come back. If you turn them into a fan rather than a client's going to go from one shop to another. And if you're on holiday, we'll just get someone else. But if they turn into a fan, they're so loyal. You know, it's like Man United fans when they lost 7-0 to Liverpool. They aren't going to change the team because they lost 7-0 because they're a Man United fan.
It's super
important. Sorry if you're a Man United fan. No. But you know, listen, it's how you make them feel. And that is the thing that's going to bring back. By the way, our job is all about client retention. That's what we do it for. You don't cut someone's hair for once. And you know, a lot of people go on about stats. There's, you know, especially with big companies, people talk to me all about stats. Does it make you a better barber than someone else because you do 30 haircuts or someone that does 10 haircuts? Because you could be doing 30 haircuts full of absolute bad habits, bad service, bad. You could be detrimental to the business. You know, it is all about retention. Absolutely 100%. And it's through skills, through techniques.
You're guessing through. Yeah, no, definitely. Lots of, we have touched on it a little bit. Now we're finding more and more people doing online education with possibly not the kind of credentials that possibly you'd expect from in-person education. Do you think we're going to see more of this? But do you see...
Very, very quickly. Online education has got its advantages and it's a fantastic platform if you want to learn from that. But the only thing with online education is the models they're going to use are going to be the perfect head of hair. So if you want to become a YouTube barber and you're going to be seeing the perfect head of hair, if someone comes in with a cow's lick, a double crown, swirls, et cetera, massive occipital bone hanging out the back of the head, you're going to think, wow, I wasn't taught this. I mean, I think cookery programs are great for learning online because you stick it in, gas marquee, in the oven, blah, blah, blah. But every single head of hair is bespoke. I think online education is not, for me, the best way to learn. I don't think you can beat live education, being in amongst it and seeing the real world. I love to pick a model out when I'm doing these shows. I love to pick a model out from the crowd because it's a real life situation. I don't know what his hair is going to be like. In fact, I came a cropper in Amsterdam because I found a model. He was on a stand, got him on the stage, didn't do any prep. And, you know, as I say, 38 years of my apprenticeship, I learned from this because I didn't do any prepping. Because, well, one, I wasn't allowed because he was on a scissor stand and he was only allowed on stage for half an hour. But guess what? I started combing his hair and it was absolutely rock solid. Couldn't get my comb through it. So you learn from that. But yeah, anyway, yeah. There we go. Online.
I can show you my experience. And my experience with online training is I don't know who's doing it. I'm not aware of it. But when I was learning at Sassoon's when I first started, they had these videos called the ABC videos. So let's just take away the word online and just say videos, right? And I was watching those videos and I was repeating the haircuts and I got better at doing them because they were so well made. They were so well done. And they explained how to dissect the haircut piece by piece. And I got really good from watching those videos. When it comes to these online videos, the barbering education, like I said, I at London School of Barbering, we don't do online training. It's all in-house. So I don't know if you can learn that way, the same as I learned from hairdressing videos. I'm sure some people would take them on board and learn from them. If you've got the models, if you get the right models for right hair, then why not? But is your question, are we oversaturated?
I think it's the amount of people that are going into it. Okay. And I think also, this is also about kind of business. There's an awful lot of business advice being given by people who are mentoring online and building a business as a side hustle.
Well, this
educating
is
educating young barbers.
The thing I'd ask is that, yes, it's great. And we're talking, you know, from an educational standpoint, you guys, like, you can tell that you love it and that's why you do it. But my question is, like, why is it there? Why is the course there at all? Why is there barber, like, what's it for? You know, if you say to me that you need to do learn how to be a barber or hairdresser in 12 weeks, and I'd say you need volume, and then you go to a course like what Michael's offering or something that Phil's doing or whatever. If you're going to do something online, what's it for? You're not doing an MVQ. It's not a level 3. Is it just intermediate stuff? Is it advanced? Why is the person doing it? Is it just a revenue stream because their business isn't doing that well, or they're working from a studio, so they're just looking to up do some more stuff because they're not doing it. It's like, why is it done in the first place?
You're seeing a huge amount of online academies that don't have a physical presence anywhere.
Yeah.
They are just... Yeah, and I'm not judging it. I'm just putting it here as a question.
Think about it. There's your overheads are not like my overheads or your overheads.
Yeah.
You know, rent space, chairs. You know, you're having to get models in, so you cut a lot of costs that way, right?
There's, you know, and I'm like, look, there's some people out there doing some of the stuff like online, and I've seen some of it, and it's incredible. A lot of this stuff,
yeah,
right?
It's
amazing. But then there's also a lot of stuff that you're like, why are you even doing it? You know, where's that come from? And it's to me, it's like, at what point does it? Are you doing it for the person that's on the other end of it? Or is it for your own
Well, that's the difference between education, isn't it? Are you coming from a place of ego when you're standing on stage, or are you coming from a place that you really want to help someone? Mm. You know, when I'm on stage, when in India, it was embarrassing because they absolutely loved me out there and they were all literally wanting selfies and autographs. I was like, man, I'm a barber. What I like to say? I always like to say on a big stage, you know, I'm, you know, still in my apprenticeship, but I'm not any greater than anyone here. I'm not any lesser. I might be a bit shorter, might have less hair than most people, but the reason I'm here, because I got taught by a genius and I'm passing that magic on to you. And if you can take one thing away, two things away, copy and paste what I'm doing, there's no reason why you can't be on this very stage in a couple of years' time. Mm. And that's the truth. Are you coming from a place of ego standing up there, or are you coming from a place you want to help people?
That's a very good point. And my question... It's a rhetorical question. Is that, are the younger generation less humble? Because they've got it all.
Instagram.
They've got everything, a click of a button.
How many followers? They want to have this big...
You know, we had to graft. We had to do it the harder way. You know, we had to be humble. We had to listen to our bosses
peers,
and do it how they tell us to do it. And it was challenging. Where I think the younger generation have got it a little bit easier than we used to have it. So, and then with that, you know, you get egos that kind of spiral out of control.
I was seeing there's been quite a lot of stuff. I've seen quite a few vids by mentors. I'm using that word in a very broad brushstroke. I'm not meaning that's way too much cynicism in my voice there. So from some of these mentors, their videos are showing and talking about, do you want to be behind the chair all your life? And in a very derogatory way about, you know, you don't want to be behind the chair when you're 40. I'm sitting there like, what?
I actually just said this on the microphone, on the platform probably an hour ago. I said, you know what? How can I say this in the nicest possible way? Some of the most successful barbers I've ever met in my life aren't on social media. They haven't got any ego, they haven't got any, and they've made more money than a lot of these guys that are just out there looking for followers, looking for hits, looking for the TikTokers. I mean, listen, it inflates your ego and you feel fantastic, but as I say, and I truly mean this, two or three of the most successful barbers have never been online, and they are smashing it behind the chair.
All of us here are over 40, so by
20, I'm 27.
By kind of, you know, by the vids being put out, you know, the film being put out, we should all have moved away from barbering now, and we should have all been mooched off to kind of Shady Pines bewilderment home.
Yeah.
I don't know if I went into it thinking, I don't think I thought of an escape plan, but you know, I've been cutting hair now, I'll be coming up 40 years, not too far away, but I really love cutting hair. I mean, I still really enjoy being in the store. I really enjoy, I've got two new 17-year-olds that we're training at the moment, and I've changed the structure around because I want to do the cutting first and the colouring later. So I'm doing much more hands-on cutting with teenagers on, and really loving it because I realise just how much knowledge is floating around in the old ball bonds and what's there. I was quite surprised how much of this kind of like, you don't want to be behind the chair after 40. It almost feels like a good wine. It's finally drinkable.
Well, it's. I'll jump in here quickly, and you'll have to shut me up probably because this drives me absolutely batshit. But what it is, it's the whole, like I said, information delivery. The thing on your smartphone is you've now got all these ways and means. Of earning, like, or trying to earn money, right? So you've got all this stuff like earn six figures, earn seven figures. You know, after COVID, you had this whole thing, was it quiet quitting, where people just weren't going back to work. That's because they spent their 2 years on their phone being told that working for the man in a capitalist environment is not the one for you. So they basically said, I'm worth more. My personal value's worth more. I can earn more doing Amazon or whatever. So now you've got like people out there that, you know, I've got this guy keeps popping up on my feed all the time. Oh, I've got 7 shops and I'm doing this. And, you know, I can show you how to do that. I'm like, listen, if you had 7 shops, you wouldn't be on social media, right? You just wouldn't do it. And the thing with YouTube as well is like, you see all this, 6 figures, 7 figures, like following the US model and like whatever. The UK market is the UK market. Our tax system is our tax system. There's no way of negating that just because you've watched a video from a US guy in telling you how to earn 15 grand a month. It's just, don't listen to it. It's utter bullshit. They just want your money. And it drives me mad. And these people are being fleeced for this.
Yeah.
Being told that you don't like your job. Yes, you do love your job. Yes, it's not about money. It's not about money. If I wanted to earn money, I wouldn't be a barber. I enjoy the craft, and I realise to maximise my income, I stand behind the chair as much as I can and do my best job, and I love it. That's why I do it. I've tried to do all the other stuff, and honestly, if you're not earning enough money doing this and you want to do it, then go and do something else. Yeah.
I was very surprised that you have to have this exit strategy at 40. It seems like amazing.
I think
my
everyone
didn't really start feeling. I didn't start feeling really quite comfy and enjoying my career until I probably hit 40.
That's the great thing about our industry, though, and I'm saying this as a compliment to the industry. everyone's in it for different reasons. You know, some people are that guy who in America who wants to hit with you the big. I'm going to be $100,000 guy, or some people are just absolutely love it. And I think the great thing we have got in common, we've got a passion for it.
But it does seem to be a kind of built-in failure mechanism. If you're not a six-figure barber, then you've failed. It's like, no, you're if you're not that 1% or the 0.01% of barbers, then you've not failed. You're in the 99% club. You're in with the rest of us, pal. You know. Which kind of takes me on to another question here, which I've got is, should we as barbers, and certainly maybe younger barbers, should we be engaging with each other? You say you've got 14 barbershops around you. I've got a barbershop opening Saturday, apparently, that's directly opposite one of my shops. Should we be going over, shaking hands, discussing our business? Should we be friends? Or should we be enemies?
No, I've just had a shop near me just open and another one. And they seem to walk past my shop as if I've done something wrong to them. As if I've, you know, or ignore me or whatever. And I'm not that guy. I have my demographic, you know, dads and kids and, you know, tapers and bits and pieces, a bit more classic, right? They have their trades. They're the one I'm flanked by two very, very good barbershops that do very, very good work. I don't think the people of Ryslip know how good the work is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They don't know. They're blissfully oblivious to what they can actually get on our high street. So I'm like, we can be walk around as if, you know, you're stealing trade and stuff, or you might as well just embrace it. I think it's just better if we've got more in common. We have the same backache, same knee ache.
I would just say, if you're going to open up a barbershop next to me, do it really well, because I'm going to do it much better than you.
I love that. Do you know, that's what I was going to say, leading on to what you were saying, right? Honestly, this is the best. I love what you're saying. Michael's just hit the nail on the head. I always say, concentrate on your own shop.
Yeah.
Concentrate on how good you are. Don't concentrate on them guys. But, you know, have respect for them. Give them a smile. And if they don't like you, it's their problem. But at the end of the day, you concentrate on growing your business. Yeah. Concentrate on that. Don't have your, what did they say? When you're driving the car forward, you can't be looking in the rear view mirror. You know, you wouldn't be looking at the shop across the road, how many they got in. Don't worry about that. Everyone that comes in your shop, every new customer, make sure they come back.
It comes up again and again, and I don't really know what to say. So I've thrown it in this one with everybody here. Do you think everyone understands self-employed against employed? They understand when you've got guys that have come to you on a 12-week course and they've decided how they're going to go and get a job and what they're going to do. Are they understanding what the implication? I know as a business, my implications, you know as businesses, your implications as a revenue stream. Do we think the young barbers coming in and the guys setting up these stores understand and explain, are we a self-employed industry or are we a bit grey?
I don't have a lot of input in this, but I just know that people don't understand the tax implications when it comes to self-employed and employed. A lot of people that have come to me, they're in their second, third, fourth professions and they've been employed by their employer for whatever career they're doing. And they they may get into it thinking, you know, I'm going to be my own boss now. I'm going to be self-employed. I'll pay my own taxes. I'll have control of how I pay my own taxes. I just feel like there's not enough knowledge or information about this.
Could you implement that in some of your courses, maybe for like a day, if you got the time? I know there's a small window of time.
We do touch on it, but not enough.
Yeah.
Do you think you could do more? Yeah, we could easily do more. We have a whole day dedicated to theory, hair science, and how to run
business. That is so important. I mean, listen, we're setting people up with the skills. All we're talking about is skills at the moment. We did touch on the customer delight, which is I think it's a bit of a natural thing you've either got or you haven't. But I think that is one thing that we could improve on. If we've got to take anything away from improvement or how we can improve teaching, I think we've got to teach these youngsters how to set up a business bank account, right? I know it sounds crazy. How to have a bit of SWOT analysis, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats. Actually look at the bigger picture of how to be successful. Because you know what? You could be a great barber, you could be great cutting hair, you could be absolutely awful businessman and you're not going to make money.
Well, none of the skills that you actually learn to be a barber are the same as what you need to be a businessman. Like, they're not. Nothing's transferable. And it's trial and error because no one really tells you anything. I've learned things in the last week that I wish I'd learned 15 years ago, if you know what I mean, when I first got my shop. So it's it was at West Harts, one of the things I did was we got the kids in and I kind of reverse engineered a business because I wanted to show them that it's not all about all the things that they see on social media, that doesn't make it true. You know, the real, you know.
Instagram versus reality.
Reality. So I was like, I made a game out of it, which was quite good fun. So they go, they pick a name, you know, how many barbers would you like? You know, what's your prices? What's your main customer base? And they pick a name, all this other stuff. And they're really into it. So I was like, okay, so, you know, we confiscate phones, but we gave one a phone and said like, okay, so get online, find me the average rent for a shop. So 13,500. Okay, average business rates. And we started to write down all the bills of this like made up shop. And when you got to the bottom, and I'm like, okay, how much is everyone going to earn? How much do you need to live? Like, how much to earn and live in this where we are now? And when we added it all up, and you realised there was not a lot left. No. And they're like, half of them, some of the teachers came to me and said, was that really like wise to do? Because you just like robbed them of all their dreams. But you're like, but that's the truth of it.
And hopefully the new generation will, you know, if they understand it, will improve it, change it and come up with some other idea. We just had exactly the same conversation on the drive up that I've only, you know, any business I've ever got involved in has to make sense on one piece of paper. It is a matter of I start at the top. Yeah. And by the time I get to the bottom, I know how much money there'll be, or I know how many haircuts or how much I've got to charge. You know, you go through it and you go, right, if I'm not doing 300 haircuts in that place, that's our break even. 200 haircuts is our break even. Can we do 200 haircuts? Yeah. No, it's not going to break even. Mm. Walk away. And that's, I do it before I even go and look at a shop. Mm. You know, we look at the rent. And then I times it by how many shares I can get in and how many haircuts. I mean, there's a physics involved above anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can get four chairs in, how many haircuts are they going to get? It's not difficult.
Well,
but I do concern myself that I think I meet more and more people that are coming in to me, and we employ. I don't do self-employed. They're on full salaries and that's that. But the amount of them that have been worried about their tax and they're waiting for a cold hand on the shoulder or a tap on the door. And there's a real concern, I think, certainly with Rachel Reeves making a big point that tax evasion is going to be a key feature. There's an awful lot of nervousness out there, and we're finding I'm having more conversations for long-term self-employed barbers wanting to get on the right side of the fence and pay their stamp. And I'm just not sure if we've either knowingly done it, or if there's an oblivion to it, if they just aren't aware that there's a tax bill coming with every penny you earn.
I think this is a real like, you could probably do a whole podcast on that, I think. I'll say something that I've been working through my head the last whatever. I think cash, right? I know everyone says cash is king, but cash is what's kept us low for a very long time. I think if everything was digital, right? For instance, now there was no cash and our prices would have to be 60 or 70, there would be more money in the kitty, then payroll and everything would have to be done in a certain way. You'd have certain parameters. If you'd like with cash, you can just get away with just doing things underneath the
counter. Do you think many, much cash is used in the industry still?
I'm seeing less.
I'm mainly digital anyway, but there is places out there that are just cash only.
Yeah, no, I mean,
the cash has kept us low.
Yeah, we're definitely all cut. I mean, I barely see cash.
I think that'll change the industry, though. If we go less and less cash and more card. In fact, obviously, through society, I mean, you go to a football stadium now and you can't pay with cash to buy a beer or a burger. There's so many restaurants now that just don't take cash. And I think it will, my prediction is, slightly going back to what we're talking about, I think that is going to be the end of a lot of barbershops. Because if a barbershop cannot take cash anymore, if it becomes less and less and less,
they won't be able to pay the VAT.
They won't be able to pay the VAT, and most barbershops would need to be VAT registered.
I think that's
one of the things that's going to kill a lot of the barbershops off, because they won't be able to handle with being squeaky clean.
Can I just say something which would be quite interesting for people out there? I had a membership system. I was taking subscription payments, right? So I got to 200 members or 227 members at one point.
And this is paying a monthly?
And paying monthly for different packages, what have you. And it was great, but it taught me an awful lot. And then suddenly my account says you're going to get a retrospective of VAT bill for like 22, 23. I was like, okay, fine. So then I started to work out model farther into the future of what I was trying to build. And I'd never done this for 15 years running a business. Everything was like bottom up. So it was almost like just get in there. What's the costs? How many are we doing? And you kind of like try and just, you know, incrementally get better. So I was like, okay, let's model this out. So 1,000 members, right? So 1,000 members meant we'd probably be doing about 1,800 appointments a month, which is a lot, right? So our average spend was £35. So that's £35,000 a month. Right, for a shop, which means 420. It's all digital, so no cash. So it was everything would have to be shown. Okay, so I've got 8 chairs. So if I paid them, say, £30,000 a year, so that leaves me, that's 8 times 30, it's 240. My shop costs about 45 to 50 grand currently to run with everything in, right? So we'd have to add more on to cope with 8 full-time like full tilt barbers for 60. So 240, there's 300. My VAT bill would be 84. That's 384. The business does 420 in total, which leaves you with 35 that you pay 19% corporations tax. So there you go. When you work
all of that, you're left with zero,
right? And not a lot of money. So that's what I mean, is that I didn't realize that planning for phase two, if you're going to be digital and show everything, haircuts need to be 60.
Yeah, so we need to start a campaign to start across the board to start raising prices.
Listen, it needs to be, because if a haircut was 60, VAT is 12, right? Brings you down to 48. Then you could pay, I don't know, half to a barber, £20 an hour. Like, you get a good member of staff and that pays their tax and stamps, and you're left with 20 quid for the shop. You take off all your other taxes and stuff. You'll probably be left with £5 or £6 of profit, more than likely. Yeah. That's a viable business. Mm-hmm. Only just. And that's at £60. You
know, I mean, we charge 35. Place across the road's opening, they're charging 28.
Yeah.
VAT on a £35 haircut?
Seven
quid. Mm-hmm. £7 off 35.
Yeah.
28, we're charging the same price.
Yeah.
Just my customer's paying £35 for it, but I'm charging £28. They're paying the government. Yeah,
it's a minefield.
But I do think there needs to be a little bit more understanding about what's to come. Maybe lighter. I was going to say, I keep asking these, thinking this is a lighter one. So, new trends against traditional with a twist. Are new trends important? Or is it just reevaluating what we've got and changing it around?
New trends are in
mullets and skullets.
They're important to like keep people interested, engaged, I guess, just to make them feel like there's something else to learn. or there might be something coming, because mullets came and they're very quickly going. And they might, we might see something else similar to that coming up. But I guess as barbers or hairdressers that want to learn different techniques, I think they are important just to keep people engaged in the industry.
Mm, I think so. I agree.
Yeah, I think everything goes around full circle. I think, you know, the mullets were in.
Mod cuts maybe next.
Anyone getting their Liams and Noles in? Are you getting much of that?
Not really.
I don't know. I'm not a fan. But I said, we'll see. I don't know.
Maybe.
We might do. Well, if they keep fleecing people on tickets, I don't know.
I was trying to get that in. No, you know, I know. I think the fashion's definitely come around. But I think, you know, the most important thing is if you know the basics, you can actually diverse into the new trends. You know, there's a lot of people that can do new trends. For instance, if longer scissor cuts come in, how many people can do it? I mean, I know people who've opened barbershops, they don't use scissors. Mental, but true. So you've got to know the basics if you want to continue to dip in and out of different trends that come along.
I'll tell you, I mean, our store's probably 60% scissor cut.
Brilliant. Yeah. Love it.
A lot of our came back after COVID with long hair and wanted to keep it, and that did us well. Good question here. This is an interesting one. Barbershops, should they be men-only stores or should they be shortcut shops? Could women have short haircut? Gender neutrality, everyone welcome. Does barber still mean a men's store? Or does it mean a barbershop is a place of short hair? How do we define barbershops for a kind of gender neutral?
Well, let me just say one quick thing. Not all barbers can do ladies' longer styles, right? So, I mean, I've had a lady sitting there once and I thought she was sitting with a guy who was waiting and he was sitting there for a lot longer. And I said, you know, who are you with? Who are you waiting on? She said, I want my haircut. And the barbers that I had in that particular store that day would literally freak out, putting section and clips in, they're all short back inside, clipper over comb, scissor over comb. And to be fair, that's what they do. That's what they specialise in. So
is a woman wanting that or...
Yeah, she was wanting that.
Or non-binary wanting a short men's haircut. Yeah, does it matter?
I think if they're having short hair, it's fine. If you can do it. I mean, if you're a barber and you can only do short back and sides or really short haircuts, would you want to take on a lady's haircut, which is longer, if you can't do it? You get what I mean?
It's an interesting point. And I was just thinking, like, why are barbers not training more up in hairdressing styles? And that could be...
I always say it's better coming from a hairdressing background into men's hairdressing because you've got that skill set of both.
I think so many hairdressers going in, upskilling and learning barbering. Mm. But I'm not sure about the other way. Maybe you guys can...
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, I think if you're going to survive and an oversaturated market that's only becoming more saturated, I think you've got to diversify.
The more you earn.
Well, I'm seeing more. So there was a spell where I started seeing guys that, like, I don't like the phrase, like modern barbers talking about being not a barber's, being a men's salon. Awesome.
Yeah. Men's groomer or men's...
Men's grooming store. And I started seeing that phrase.
Men's bar call their salons, don't they?
Call them what?
They call their shop salons.
Right, men's salons.
Men's salons, yeah.
And so is that excluding? And then I guess I have started seeing short hair shops. So that's what they're selling, is we are a short hair salon, I think. You come across many of that? Do you think it matters if a lady wanted to come in or someone wanted to come in?
If I can do it, then I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. If you can,
but it's
do
within
it.
The skill base that you've got.
Definitely.
Yeah. And that's near enough. Mostly, I could have a go at anything, really.
But that's what I'm saying. I think the word barber.
Well, to barb is to just do the beard anyway.
Isn't men only though? That's what I'm saying. The word barber.
Women's beards.
Women's beards.
Yeah, a few tashes.
And I come from in Scotland, there's a couple of girls with more facial hair than me. Yeah.
Oh, mate, that is going to love go. That. You get that, Luke? Excellent.
Oops, I can't go back home again.
But you do see, I mean, you guys do a bit more around the country. Certainly you do. You do a bit, don't you? Do you see differences as you go around the country? I'm so London-centric. You're very London-centric as well.
Yeah, but I see the difference when I go to Manchester.
The difference
It's a different... Yeah, I think it's like the diversity is more concentrated in Manchester. So you see different styles, different haircuts, just because it's there's so much in a small, condensed place. So, you know, whenever I go to Manchester, I like to see the young people in the street, you know, being a bit brave, being a bit brazen, trying out some colour, trying out some different hairstyles.
Yeah, I think the big cities all round are definitely out there, you know, with different stuff going on, you know. I think the UK is a diverse place, even though we're a small island, if you like. I think there's a lot of diversity going on with hair, which is brilliant for us. Keeps it interesting.
From what all I see is on a slightly different train, but a lot of outside, like where I am in Ruislip, it's very, a lot of the high streets very brand heavy. Not many independent stores. So, and I actually don't like that part because, you know, people that come to it, if it's, you know, you go to some places, I don't know, where's Charlie's shop, Western Supermare or these other places. It's sometimes they're like the artisan coffee shops and stuff like that, and you get that kind of, that demographic. Ours is very sort of urban, very, you know, suburbia, but it's very brand orientated. So it's, I don't know if that sort of lends its way to trends, different to, I see some shops, some of the cuts that they put up, I just don't get them.
I mean, you see a lot of the city centres are having real revamps. You go up to, I was in Sheffield a little while ago, and it's like, it was 20 years between it, but, you know, Sheffield's a banging place. They spent some proper money on the refits.
Yeah.
But again, there are some of the artisans still hanging on in there. I know there's some very good barbers in Sheffield. But there's all those brands, you know, they seem to be funded by Marks and Spencers or Waitrose or whatever that.
Well, I've just had a Gales open up on my eyes to see, which is, I got told yesterday by a customer, he thinks it's the middle class Greggs, which I thought was like, I thought that was quite a nice
We're
twist.
Inches away from the, from the high end pasty. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, boys, for covering our first topic programme. I've really enjoyed that.
Thanks for having us.
It'd be interesting to see it back and see if we made any sense. But I really enjoyed hearing what you have to say. It's really lovely running this round the room.
Thanks for having us.
It was good.
End on, like, you know, we're talking through the problems in our industry, but there is a silver lining in the sense that, you know, people are always going to want their haircuts. Mm. We're in a really great industry that's, you know, hopefully not going to be taken over by AI, you know, and we can just carry on enjoying it and making people's lives and, you know, changing people's lives.
Mm. Definitely.
Agreed.
Well done, fantastic. Mate. Very well said. Thank you.
Yeah.
And lovely to hear proper change of opinions, hearing that, you know, the breadth of our industry still exists and is surviving and doing well.
Yeah.
Boys, thank you all very much. Luke.
Thanks, lads.
Yes, thanks, Luke, for listening.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.